The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
And it is time for Ask the Expert. And joining me for the slot this morning to answer your medical questions is Dr. Eleanor Galvin. You're very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Ciara.
You have no food for me, do you?
I have no food for you. I'm so sorry. I might steal some of yours.
You can, but you have all of your expertise. So looking forward to getting through all of our listeners' questions this morning. I'm actually just going to put this first question to you, if you don't mind, Eleanor. I had a stem cell transplant 4 years ago. The chemo put me into menopause at 41, but I had no symptoms at all at the time, aside from period stopping. Blood tests show I'm postmenopausal, but in the past 2 weeks I've experienced hot flushes and brain fog. Should I be on HRT now, or is it too late?
No. So there's kind of a whole new thinking about HRT, and it's a much more kind of individualised approach, and kind of we talk about better ways of giving it into people and using what's appropriate for you and your medical history. So generally it's positive to start HRT up to the age of 60, and even a little bit beyond that, as long as you pick the patients well and they need it. And while we're all postmenopausal, well, I'm certainly postmenopausal, none of us are ever postmenopausal. We're just always in an oestrogen deficit for the rest of our life once our period stops. It doesn't just magically all get better. So like how long people take it, why they take it, that all changes. Doesn't matter if it's only now she's getting symptoms. Why should she suffer? She should go have a discussion, perhaps about her history, to make sure there's nothing in it that would mean she can't take it. But I bet there probably isn't. She had a stem cell transplant. That is not for a breast cancer. And even people who have non-estrogen dependent, there's a whole different approach to HRT now, which is person-centred. If you're suffering, don't be suffering. Go and see somebody and have a chat about what kind of HRT might suit you. And even if you couldn't take the normal ones, there are other ones. There's vaginal estrogen, what are her symptoms? And there are medication even for people to help menopausal symptoms that can't take HRT. So
there's lots of options there for people.
Most people haven't run out of time for trying it if they're suffering.
No, I think the person must be about 45, 46 years of age.
That's an early age to end up with no estrogen in you.
Okay, get yourself to the doctor. There's help out there. Speaking of women's health issues, we're going to talk about polycystic ovary syndrome, which is not being called that anymore. No. It's now been renamed after a very long campaign to PMOS. What does that stand for, Eleanor? And why was the change in the name so important to, I suppose, the understanding of what this is and indeed the treatment for it?
So it's changed to polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome to reflect the fact it's a whole body disease and not just a disease that is dealt with by gynaecs about infertility. So women are more than their reproductive capabilities. So,
newsflash.
Yeah. So if you have a disease, it is affecting you in more ways than maybe it might be harder to get pregnant. So we shouldn't be just looking for polycystic ovaries for people's reproductive capacity. Yes, of course, that's important. But there's a whole load more to PCOS, which is now PMOS, because people can have acne, hair loss, as well as too much hair, tiredness, chronic fatigue, mood changes, insulin differences. So there's an awful lot more. And it's really a symptom that should be treated with medication under the care of a team, not just a gynae who's trying to make your periods regular. So it should be under a team, an endocrinologist, as well as a gynae, as well as a GP, as well as regular follow-up, not just something that is kind of pushed under the carpet. 1 in 8 women have it in some form or another, which is a lot. So it's better to have a better understanding of something that is so complicated that can make women's lives harder.
Yeah, so for a long time, all of those other wider issues associated with these condition and indeed the long-term health implications of having all of those side effects were kind of ignored, weren't they?
Yeah, and it was kind of like test them once and you're done, whereas now you kind of test maybe girls come in late teens and their periods aren't regular and you say maybe they have a bit of PCOS and maybe they don't, and then we check them again at 25 because it mightn't be that regular. But it's also the other pieces, the spots. Are they always just trying to get ahead of their spots? Are they tired? Are they off form? There's also now different subtypes recognised of it. So it's not just polycystic ovaries. Why is it that way? Which is the hormone path that's gone wrong in you and your whole body disease?
Now, I happened to be in an A&E, nothing too serious, yesterday afternoon. Yeah. But what I did see was one poor young girl really suffering so badly with hay fever, which again, I think is one of those conditions that unless you have it, you really underestimate the impact that it can have on a person.
It says it's really, the whole hay fever place is really, really interesting because it's a huge increase in the amount of hay fever we've been having over the last many years. And also the fact that you can try and get ahead of it. And I suppose it's to know that hay fever season is coming. Get your daily antihistamines in, use your saline nasal washes, and physical barriers for hay fever are so important. But you think it's partly because of climate change that we're having so much hay fever, that we have longer, hotter summers, more pollen. They think there's an increase in carbon dioxide in the air from the whole industrialized nation and that's making plants make more pollen. And also we have cleaner children where we wash our children, don't let them run around in muck and grass when they're small. So they're exposed to less germs and less pollen, and that changes their immune system. So now we're seeing far more people maybe with hay fever than we did in the recent past.
So you talk about all those sort of over-the-counter options for people, but is there a point where an individual who is suffering with hay fever should seek medical advice?
Oh, absolutely. So you can try all the over-the-counter things. You can do, there is pollen weather kind of app, so you can see whether we're going to have high pollen next week. And you can kind of guess from May till August, we kind of do here. And you can kind of give it 7-10 days, try doing your antihistamines, your nose washes, your eye drops, your wraparound shades, your Vaseline up your nose to trap the pollen, washing your clothes when you get inside, don't hang them out to dry. And if that doesn't work, there is a whole load of things that can be prescribed that are much stronger, change how your immune system reacts to the hay fever, and hopefully get on top of it. And then if we don't get on top of it, then you can go to an allergy specialist, you can go to an ear, nose and throat person. And it's worth handling because it does make people miserable.
It does. And there are lots of claims online about lots of natural remedies for hay fever.
Now,
do you believe in those?
There is stuff about local honey and that. I do think if there's any sort of natural remedy, like if it's a sort of nettle tea or something, fire away and give it a chance. But if any of those were potent, some pharmaceutical company would have come and whipped them up and made them into a drug. There's very little things that will maybe do as much as an over-the-counter antihistamine in the form of natural remedies. And if they had proof of them, sure, wouldn't they be selling them at a premium to us all?
All right. But as you say, look, if you feel it's working for you,
go into a pharmacy and get a lot of over-the-counter stuff and then work it up to the next level if that's not working. We'd have a lot of people who'd be coming this time of the year for their prescription to do them for the whole summer to try and keep on top of this. And then people who aren't can go and have immunotherapy to try and get rid of their allergies for certain things like grass pollen, you know.
We have another texter in here. I'm male, 40 years of age, and I've been diagnosed with PVC, premature ventricular contraction. It doesn't give me too much trouble, but my father passed away at 73 with a sudden cardiac event, and I'm worried, but I think my own anxiety may be making things worse. Does that person need to be so concerned?
I wonder, they were diagnosed by a cardiologist. They've seen a cardiologist. They've probably been told to be less stressed. It's a really easy thing to say to someone. And his dad having died young, it kind of must feed into it. I'm sure if he's had a cardiologist who doesn't feel the need to give him meds or do an intervention, he's probably fine. But I would be saying less caffeine, less wine, less stress. But it's hard to know without having seen his ECG and having seen what the cardiologist said.
But with a condition like that, having less stress and less anxiety, more relaxation, probably more exercise, a good diet is really important.
It's good for everybody, for every condition, and just for the impact of a condition like that on him. And I'm sure it is stressful to think there's something not quite 100% about your heart. I would say things like palpitations and that can be very stressful, and then it can go in a cycle. But a palpitation doesn't harm people once you've had it looked at. Lifestyle has a huge amount to pay in everything.
All right. Let me just go to another question that's come in. It's about moles and skin cancer because at this time of year, we are exposed to more and more sun in Ireland. What are the key warning signs that a mole needs to be checked out by a doctor?
Oh, they talk about the A, B, C, D, E of moles. So that's any sort of visible change that you see or a new mole. So they talk about the A is asymmetry, that one half it doesn't fold over on the other. And the border is the B, which is around the edge of it. Is it a regular, raggy looking mole? And the C is the colour of it. Has it got darker, changed in colour? And then the diameter, more than the size of the top of a pen or the eraser on top of an old-fashioned pencil, 6 millimetres. If anything's bigger than that, you really need to have it seen. And then evolving. Is it been changing? Has it been doing anything? Has it been itchy? Has it been bleeding? All of those things are really important to think about. But if you get a new mole and it looks funny to you, or it even doesn't look funny the next time you're down your GP, shove it out, show it to me. I'd love to see it. And we can have a look at it. And if it is looking dodgy, you are better off to deal with it faster rather than waiting to see how big does it get.
Yeah, I think we tend to underestimate sometimes, don't we, the danger of those. A, B, C, D, E, asymmetry, border, colour, diameter, evolving. That's what they stand
That's
for.
That's fabulous.
There you go, I've learned something new every day. Dr. Eleanor Galvin, thanks so much for coming into us on the Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.